I'll bet that what you did was to go through the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. And these are non-negotiable. I'm not proposing that the best out of seven is good enough, right? You did hear that there originally were 15? And Moses trips on the way down. And one tablet breaks. And he gets to the bottom of the hill. You've heard this? And he gets to the bottom of the hill and he says, I got good news and I got bad news. The good news, there were 15, now there's only 10. The bad news is adultery is still on the list. terrible. But the idea here is not so much to replace the content. This is a style of doing it. Right, so what I'm going to talk about here with this exercise is a way to do the examination of conscience that may be done as a prayer. I've organized it using the letters in the word grace, so to have an easy acronym. And the idea here is that it's a prayer that's intended on a daily basis to take about 10 minutes. But it is intended as a daily prayer. I mean, generally when we were taught, when I was taught, I suspect when you were taught, to make the examination of conscience necessary before confession, it probably was, you know, something, but you tried to look over your whole month or your whole 6 months or whatever. The idea here is a daily prayer that will indeed help you to be ready for confession, but help you with a lot else as well. And so the idea of this 10-minute prayer using the acronym GRACE is to start by an act of gratitude. And so the idea here of this prayer is to begin by thanking God for something. It could be thanking God that you're alive. It could be thanking God for your faith. It could be thanking God for your dear mother. It could be thanking your Lord, thanking God for something that happened today, the association that you have with Malta, how the day went. But to begin by thinking of something you're grateful for and thanking the Lord. So it's not just a matter of a thinking exercise, but it's a matter of thinking and then saying thanks. If it's been one of those days when it takes 10 minutes to think of something you're grateful for, you just say, Roger, over and out. And we'll do some more tomorrow, right? But the idea is in fact to thank the Lord. And part of it in the beginning, of course, is that that's simply the appropriate posture of gratitude. But also it's something that helps make this a prayer by truly saying to the Lord, thanks for that. And perhaps being, you know, explaining what it is that you're grateful for. It, you know, it's just a marvelous and amazing in the way that it helps one get into prayer. The second part, the R, stands for a request. And specifically for the request for light. That just as here in this room, without the benefit of the illumination from the ceiling, we couldn't see, or outside with moonlight or sunlight, especially when we get locked out of our rooms and need to work on the moonlight. But we need the light, not only externally, but we need the light internally. And the idea here in this second part is, again, making a request, but specifically a request for that internal light so that we'll see what God wants us to see. Give us something of a pointer. So in the first two, lengthy, it might be on a given occasion, but the first part is presumably just thanking God for something, as long as you need to. Then secondly, asking that he'll show us what he wants us to see. And he might want us to see how well things went, and that might be enough on a given day. He might also want us to see something that's sinful, to look it in the face. He might want us just to look at a problem, and he might very well want to shine some light on how to solve some issue. So the idea is not to foreclose what God's going to do, but simply to ask him. Let me pause on that for just a minute. I suspect that you all are very prayerful people and are used to a variety of things that you do in your prayer. But sometimes when I've talked with people individually, I find is that they're okay with one type of prayer, not okay with another type of prayer. There's some type of people who are very good at praising God, or good at studying the scriptures, but they don't like asking things for themselves. Others are good about asking for others, but they're hesitant to ask for themselves. Or maybe just the reverse. But part of what the Lord is so interested in, right, you see it so many times in the course of the Gospels, is that he does urge us to pray and to pray with confidence. Do you remember the story he tells, for instance, when people are asking him about prayer? And he tells the story about Abraham. And you remember Abraham, he tells us, it's in Genesis, was informed by the Lord that the Lord intended to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham decides he's going to plead for them. And Abraham decides to be a good, you know, Iraqi carpet merchant, you know, and I'm going to bargain with him, right? And he says, if I can find 50 just people, will you spare the city? And the Lord says, yes. And then Abraham, how about 45? What if I don't make quota? God accepts 45. How about 40? God accepts 40. And to Abraham's tremendous surprise, he can get God down to 30. He'll spare the city even for 20. And then Abraham puts out his last, I don't know how much I dare push this, how about if I can only find 10? And God accepts it. When Jesus is telling it, he's praising Abraham for doing it. What is Abraham's only mistake?
He stopped at 10.
There were only 8. God, in fact, destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. If Abraham had bargained him down to 5. But the point, I presume, is that God doesn't mind our begging. And a widow is pleading his case, and finally, the unjust judge gets tired of the widow, and so he gives her what he says, how much more will the Father do it? So I say that simply to urge that if you're self-conscious about asking for yourself, maybe you're not, good thing. But if you are in any way self-conscious about asking for yourself, I think that the Lord encourages us to do it. And then secondly, a request. But a request for the light to show us what he wants us to see. And he may, if we've got some sin, he may want to show us some light on what the root of the sin is. If we've simply got some problem with a bit of self-image or a sense that I'm not quite lovable enough, it may be that he wants to show us what he loves about us. It may be we've simply got a problem. And if there's a problem, we need light on it. And so we can beg him and beg him continuously for a certain time. An account of one's actions and attitudes. And here, this is probably the longest part of the 10 minutes, right? I don't envision the gratitude or the request as taking a lot of time on most days. They might. And if they do, that's fine. But on most days, I suspect the third part, the account of one's actions and attitudes, is probably the part that takes the longest. Let me offer a way of doing it. By saying an account of one's actions and attitudes, all I mean is what actually happened in the course of the day and how was I feeling? Now, if you're anywhere near like myself, you'd say, what did I do today, right? Then can I even remember, right? That's always an issue. But precisely in order to counter that, as I've gotten a little older, let me describe what I actually do this every day. And, you know, it's very flexible while I'm proposing the 5 parts because Ignatius did. And I've come up with the 5 letters and the word grace just to give an easy mnemonic. But after that, it's really flexible how you do this. So here's my own strategy for doing it. I tend to do it late at night. I've told you about my freshman. At 10 o'clock at night, we have our night court. So that's from 10 to about 10:30. I get more business done between 10:30 and 11 because I can find the ones I need to talk to, you know. So 11 o'clock, I come upstairs to my room in the dormitory, and I clean off the desk, take off my clothes, turn off the light, and I sit on the floor. Now, you don't have to sit on the floor to do this. I realize that might be a considerable challenge. I sit on the floor largely because I don't normally sit on the floor. And it's not helpful to do this prayer in this fashion. Right? It's not going to work if you do it in bed. So you can sit at your desk, you can sit at your easy chair. I sit on the floor. That makes sure I'm not going to spend more than 10 minutes on it. I also turn off the light, because what I'm asking God is for the light to come into my mind about how my day has gone. You can do this in the bright light. You can sit with a piece of paper if you want at your desk with the light on, right? It's flexible. I sit on the floor in the dark. I thank the Lord. Lord, thank you. It's 11 o'clock, time to go to sleep. Thank you very much. And I ask for a little bit of light to see how the day went. And then the account of actions and attitudes, because I do it late at night, what I tend to do is start with the previous night. And so I say, okay, did I get to bed at a reasonable hour? Did I fall asleep easily, or was I still tossing and turning? Did I dream? I'm not a big one on dreams, but dreams can be significant. Meg, hello, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Dear patron, St. Joseph had some very interesting dreams, right? Take Blessed Mother for your wife. And see, I picture that dream. When Joseph got the directions to accept Mary as his wife. I mean, I really think that after he had heard she was pregnant, for a week, he was tearing his hair out, trying to find a solution. And when he finally gets to sleep, the angel says, I've been trying to tell you for a week. Right? That doesn't say that. Right. But whether it's that or taking the child and his mother down to Egypt or bringing the child back, right? I mean, dreams. And his patron saint, in Joseph in Genesis. Remember, the Pharaoh has the dream, right? And he's got to interpret the dream. So dreams can be significant. I'm not going to make much of them. But you can ask if there was a significant dream. The only really series of dreams I ever had is right after my father died. Dad died back in 2001. And, you know, I confess that, boy, I had more dreams about him. After that, I don't remember too many of them. Anyway, how about when I wake up? And I can say this morning, when I woke up, was it one of those, good morning, Lord? Or was it one of those, good Lord, it's morning already, right? Okay. Did I wake up on the right side of bed? Now, in my case, okay, what do? I generally, just after I've taken care of a little bit of business, I try to do some push-ups, get a little exercise, try to stay in shape. I try to do some praying. I generally have a morning mass for a group of sisters someplace in the Bronx. So I'm on the road by, say, 6:30, 6:45. Drivers in the Bronx give me plenty of opportunity to examine my conscience. They have this very interesting habit of making left turns from the far right lane. Right? Who was I mad at? Teacher. Monday and Thursday, I have an 8:30 class, so I'm in there and got to be, you know, sharpened with it. But, of course, one of the things as a teacher is you've got the people who are busy participating, and then you've got the people sitting in the back row. And one of the things of the people sitting in the back row is they think that they're out of range. No, right? So part of my job is to make sure that, you know, I'm not only getting the bright, eager beavers, but that I'm throwing a couple of pitches to the folks in the back row, right? And trying to get them in and get them knowing that they need to be. So part of it is that how I do that. Or when I'm at the Jesuit community, maybe I'll get there set for lunch or something or other. And of course, we're free to sit with whom we like. One of my questions is, do I only sit with my friends? There are people to whom I know you are aware that there's perfect doctrinal conformity in the Jesuit community. But, you know, your brothers. And part of it is how do I deal with that? The people with whom I work in the philosophy department. Right? The philosophy department's a wonderful place. On the other hand, let me tell you the story, not about our philosophy department, but I was out down at a convention one time, and I'm in the elevator, and one person says to the other person in the elevator, how are things going at your place this semester? And the other one says, you know, it's good. The major crazies are away on sabbatical, so all I've got are the minor crazies. Right, because I mean, well, I've got various kinds of jobs. Some of it's teaching, some of it's dealing with the freshmen, but I also have all kinds of, you know, writing jobs. And they're things that, you know, you say, do I do only the stuff I like? Do I do some of the other stuff I need to do? How do I use my time? Not intended as you got a 24-hour day. How do I do this in a 10-minute? So what I actually do when I sit down on the floor. Thank the Lord for something, ask his grace. I spend about a minute just thinking what did happen today, right? just trying to remember, because as we get older, right, we find ourselves saying, well, how did I spend my time? So I do a minute in which I'm basically just literally just saying the things I did, just reviewing it in my own mind. But then I spend the next 5, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever, I spend some time, and I'm not just trying to remember what happened, but now I want to make a prayer out of this. And so what I do is, at that point, I turn back to the Lord, and I say, now, Lord, of all these things that I just reviewed for the last minute, merely getting the chronology, of these things, what do you and I need to talk about? Sometimes he makes it clear, sometimes I get to choose. But the idea is, I'm going to tell him what went on. So let me just make up an example. Supposing it's an example about those drivers in the Bronx. And I say, you know, Lord, I mean, I was trying to just to get to the morning mass, and I know I needed to keep moving here because I'm, you know, running just not quite late, but almost. And yet I really was annoyed with that person who cut in front of me. What did I do? Did I give him a hunk? Did I give him a good thought in my mind? Did I say a few words because I knew he couldn't hear me? I mean, what? But I would talk through with him what happened. Sometimes it's a matter of doing it even for my classes, right? And it's, I can say, you know, Lord, I do know the stuff. I wasn't as well prepared as I ought to be. I'm sure you remember in your teachers, some days they were just winging it, right? Right? I mean, we all do, right? Even though you can't wing it, you need to be prepared. You need to be really up on the stuff. I need to talk about eating and exercise. But I'm not just doing self-help technique here. I'm talking to the Lord about it. Lord, am I disciplining my taste buds? Am I doing what I need to be doing for Lent? To take care of what you've given me? And a failure to take care of things is actually, in my judgment, a problem with the vow of poverty. I'm going to cause a whole lot more expenses if I don't take care of myself. You know, I don't need to be Charles Atlas here. I don't need to be, you know, the world's greatest physically fit person by overdue indulging. But there's some things I need to do. I would choose one of those episodes. You know, on the question about how to deal with conversations, again, I suspect that we've all got our stories. One of the things they try to inculcate in us from the time when we are novices is about how to deal with the people that were inclined to judge very harshly. You remember Jesus has some very strong words telling us not to judge the person. What we are told is to give a person a plus sign. Now, a plus sign, as opposed to a minus sign, that is, give the person a favorable interpretation rather than an unfavorable interpretation. But the plus sign, of course, does also remind you of something else. That is, now I wouldn't go like that, right? You said something stupid.
I wish you would.
Okay. But when I find somebody has said something stupid or something dumb or something thoughtless or something that's wounding, I can, even without doing this, I can do it with my eyes. And the person doesn't know what I'm doing. I mean, if I do it to you, you might be able to see my eyes moving. Dear present Pope, our dear present Pope has said some things that leave you wondering, right? I mean, a great man. I mean, some of his gestures, magnificent. Clearly, I think his heart is in the right place. Why he insists on giving interviews at the back of airplanes when he's dead tired, I don't know. But some of the things he said pertain to this judgment issue. Remember the famous line, who am I to judge? Now, unless he really fails to be on the side of the angels, I'm going to assume I'll give him a plus sign too. I presume he's on the side of the angels. But the distinction that I was presuming he meant when he made that comment is, we've all heard that, and I think that that makes better sense than who am I to judge? Right? That is, because we say there are certain kinds of conduct that actually are unacceptable to the Lord. I don't know the person's heart, so who am I to judge the person? I cannot. I simply cannot, because I don't know the person's heart. I don't know what the person is struggling with. I don't know the state of the person's soul. But it doesn't mean that I pretend I don't know the nature of certain actions. And I think that in knowing the nature of certain actions, I may well have to continue to observe what the Lord does, and to judge the action as utterly unacceptable, even for 10 minutes a day. What I will get from him, I think, is all kinds of grace to tell the situation more accurately and really to know myself better and know what I ought to do. I'll get to what I ought to do in a moment with the C and the E. But let me just finish out one more thing on the A. Do you ever find in the course of your life, on a given day, when something hasn't worked out quite right, that conversation that didn't go well, some failure on my part to say what I needed to say, give what witness, I was a coward, I didn't do it, I was overly lustful, I was whatever it is that I was. And then you start replaying the tape all day long. I won't ask for a show of hands, but I ask you to think, do you have those days when you replay the tape? Oh yeah. Okay, here's my suggestion. If you have a day on which you're replaying the tape, boy, do you need to do an examination of conscience that day. But it's not helpful to replay the tape during the day. You'll probably feel like replaying the tape 27 times. But in my judgment, if I replay the tape 27 times, every time I replay the tape, I get better and better, and the other guy gets worse and worse. That's not true. I have a friend who has just the opposite experience. Behind your ear, you'll find a little stop button. So you press the stop button, and then there's an eject button. So you hit the eject button, and then it comes out the right ear, and you give it to your guardian angel, and you say, please take this tape to the celestial dead letter office. And if I have to do that 27 times, I do. But every 27 times that I hit the stop button and the eject button and give the tape to the old guardian angel, I also promise, but I will replay the tape during my examination of conscience. So it's not that I'm really and truly to look at it and to tell him how I saw it, and in fact, if I'm seeing it right, I'll be reinforced. If I need to correct something, okay, I will correct it, but I need to see it in his light. Make sense? C and the E. Number four is chart your course. So after I've done this examination, this account of my actions and attitudes, the fourth part is, should I continue on course? Have I in some way or other wandered off course and I need to correct my course? If I've noticed sin, great, I should right then make an act of contrition. Lord, I was lustful today. I need to apologize to you. I need to confess my sin right then. If I was excessively angry, disproportionately upset at somebody, I need right then. If I was whatever I was doing, perhaps I was cowardly when I should have been a little bit more bold, I should right then confess my sin. So whether it's a matter of just sort of making a continuing on course or correcting my course, making a confession, an act of contrition, maybe it's a matter of being better ready for confession. Again, in Malta, I suspect that you are probably on a good trajectory with regard to getting to confession. It's part of why we scheduled this morning the opportunity here. I suspect you have the opportunity and you make the opportunity regularly. But it is a question about being ready. Do you find yourself, when going to confession, saying the same things every time? It doesn't surprise me. We're the same people. I'm still likely to do the same thing. So I'm not surprised. And as a confessor, I accept that, right? Part of the way in which I can chart my course is to say, what specifically can I do to correct my course? And all I'm doing by that, having some physical gesture to do, putting my hands on my waist, all I'm going to do by that is give myself a 3-second time lag before I let loose on whatever it is that I was about to say. Right? I mean, it could be something as simple as that, right? Where you're thinking about how to correct it. Perfectly good in a confession to say, okay, there's something that's sin. Some of this is not sin so much as just a weakness in my life. And I must simply admit it to the Lord and cast myself again upon his help and ask for the grace to do it in the sacrament. Another question, of course, is how often you get to confession. I don't think there's one answer to that. The only formal legal requirement for confession is that one must confess a mortal sin. When you read in the Catechism, the section on the confession, what it talks about is that mortal sin, of course, must be confessed in order to be forgiven. If one is in a situation where one has some ambiguity, one may make an act of perfect contrition, that is, being contrite because it offends the Lord. Venial sin, we can indeed trust with a good act of contrition and the reception of Holy Communion, but we are much recommended to mention it in confession. But how often? One of the things I mentioned to my dad once, when Dad died in 2001, about 2 years before, my picture of it is about 1999, I asked him, Dad, because Dad died at age 86, right? So I asked him, Dad, are you still able to get to confession? And he said, oh yeah, I get to confession about every 2 months. Mom, not so much. She's got a little Alzheimer's problem here, so she doesn't really remember anymore, but I get there every 2 months. Great, Dad, that's good. Well, after he died in 2001, I was out in Pittsburgh cleaning out the house. And Dad used to like to shave in the bathroom downstairs. And downstairs, he had on the wall tacked up calendars that went back for years. He just put a new calendar on top. And Dad was an accountant. All kinds of papers that I found. I have no idea what he was so busy. I found in all these calendars going back for years is that the Saturdays were numbered. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, C. Had I not asked that question, I don't think I ever would have known, probably never have suspected, what that C stood for. Interestingly, it was not only a retrospective calendar. He had the rest of the year 2001 mapped out, because most of it's involved the internet, right? And so I say to them, when you get on the internet, have you ever noticed on the upper right-hand portion, there's a little circle, red background with a white X? And of course, what that is, the kill switch, right, to get off of a page. How about when you get on the internet, just sit there for a minute, St. Michael, the guardian angel, guard me against temptation. And then, with your cursor, just trace that circle and maybe trace that X before you do whatever you're going to do, just so you'll remember it's there. Right? And the idea is, if you will make a habit out of that, make a little ritual out of doing two or three things before you get on the internet, I'm not saying it's a magic bullet, but I'm saying you have reminded yourself by this habit, and you've gotten into the habit of doing it every day, that reminding yourself that there's a way to get out of a page where you inadvertently wound up. So, last one, the E, stands for entreating the Lord for the energy and the enthusiasm that you need to carry out the course that you have set. Right? While the fourth part, to chart your course, has to do with what am I going to do, I've certainly come to realize, as I have grown older, that it's not just a matter of my raw willpower. It is very much a matter of asking God for the grace to help me do something. What I'm urging is that one says, okay, Lord, this is what I intend to do. I'm going to watch my tongue. I'm going to watch my eating. I'm going to be prepared before that person who drives me crazy comes into the room, and I'm going to be ready to be civil, maybe even charitable toward them. But Lord, I need your help to do that. And so the last part is begging or entreating the Lord for the energy, the enthusiasm to carry out whatever course I charted, our own conscience. So what we do is, in this big auditorium, I spend about 10 minutes doing what I just did with you, just talking it through. And then we lower the lights. And so we begin with in semi-darkness, and each of the parents is supposed to get the children to say something they're thankful for. Okay, that's easy. Kids like that. Okay, kids get to light the candle. That's always great fun. The third part then, even as a family exercise, is the account of actions and attitudes. And here, the parents in that situation can be enormously helpful with their kids in thinking about how things are going, quite naturally.